for anyone that's releasing music is to have a plan. We do talk to a lot of young artists who will send us music, and whether it's good, bad or indifferent, you know, the key element is that they need to have a strategy and a plan behind it. It's easy to put out a song and release it, you know, into the world, but, you know, if you don't have a strategy behind what you're doing, it becomes completely futile.
Welcome to Songwriter Trysts, an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I want to talk to other songwriters about the power of songwriting, talk about their journey and how they got to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. To support the podcast and follow our journey, you can find us on songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to a Songwriter Tryst with my special friend, Frank Verasso from Verasso PR. How are you doing?
Good, Ray Lee. How are you doing?
I'm good. We've done this a few times with people that you've been representing. You've sent me some fantastic people to interview. And now we finally get to chat and share with people what it is that you do behind the scenes. It's a bit of a mystery, I think, to a lot of people that might be listening. So I'm going to start by getting you to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from.
Well, obviously, my name's Frank Verasso. I run a PR company called Verasso PR, and essentially what we are radio pluggers and TV pluggers. So, you know, our role is to essentially get music on radio and video clips on TV. So obviously that requires a great deal of work. It's something that's quite common across Australia. There are a number of PR companies that do what we do. But essentially, you know, we work for a lot of the, you know, record labels, management companies, touring companies, independent artists, etc., who have, you know, radio releases that they would like sent to media. And, you know, the role we have is to essentially secure airplay or video play for those artists whenever they release some music. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell. It sounds quite basic, but it's quite a convoluted process.
That's the dream though. Like when someone like myself records and releases a song, we all know that music goes on radio. We all know about MTV, but we don't know how it gets there or what it takes to get there either. And it is a mystery to most of us about how to do that. But that's where, you know, part of the income for independent artists and main record labels and everything comes from is the royalties of that, as well as people getting to know who you are. So they have heard your music and they do want to buy a ticket and come see you when you're touring. So it is a big part of the whole cycle of things. How did you end up in this particular role? Because it does seem it's very niche, and it's probably a part of the industry that, for people on the outside looking in, is completely unseen. How did you end up in this position?
I started working at Warner Music many moons ago, and from there I was working as the PR manager for Victoria and Tasmania, and I was at Warner for a number of years. I was offered a few positions up in Sydney where head office was at the time, but they were label management positions, and I really had a love for PR. So, you know, dealing with, at the time I was dealing with radio, print and television, and yeah, my passion for that sort of, you know, grew as I grew into the role, I guess. Yeah. And from there ended up moving to Sydney eventually with EMI, where I was doing national publicity, and that involved maybe dealing with, you know, predominantly print media, you know, newspapers and magazines. Yeah. And, you know, I was liaising obviously with a lot of the managers and marketing people from EMI over in, you know, globally, really from the US and the UK. And from there was offered a position at Festival Mushroom when Gadinski had sold it off to Murdoch. I was at Festival Mushroom for about 7 years, I think, both in Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah.
And then I believe Warner Music had purchased Festival Mushroom, or Festival, I should say, at that point, but I was offered a position, luckily, at Sony Music, where I headed up the PR team there nationally as well. So after a few years at Sony, I then decided, you know what, I could probably do this on my own now. I've had enough experience and decided to start my own company. And it was a very nerve-wracking time because you just don't know what to expect. And I didn't know whether the phones would ring, and fortuitously they did. So been running Verasso PR now for 14 years and it's been a lot of fun. And, yeah, had some wins and some misses along the way, but it's been predominantly, you know, a really enjoyable experience.
And it is a bit about that, and I think it's important to just highlight, you said wins and misses, let's not gloss over it. That is kind of what we're doing with this. Just because we go to a PR agent with our what we think is this hot new single, it doesn't mean that everyone's going to like it just because we throw a bunch of money at a song. You know, it has to be the magic combination of good music at the right time with the right people, and you know, the audience needs to be ready to hear it as well. How do you manage that? How like, because you have to deal with that on a daily basis.
We do. I think, you know, there are a number of issues there, Rayleigh, that are really, really important. I'm glad you asked this question because, you know, it is about managing expectations. It's also, you know, it's also managing the output that we have. You know, it's very easy for a PR firm to just take on work and take money. We don't have that philosophy at all because there are a number of issues at play. First and foremost, we play God with an artist's music, okay? Every artist that comes to us with a song will obviously listen to it, and if we think we can add value, then chances are we'll take that project on. To add to that as well, you know, as I mentioned, you know, you're as an artist or a label or a manager, when you give us a song to work, you know, we play God in so many ways because an artist is there, you know, literally giving their career and placing it in our hands. So we have to be, you know, really committed first and foremost, and secondly, really diligent with the amount of work that we put in. So It's really important, and a lot of people gloss over that because there are PR agencies out there, I know, that, you know, will take on any client, throw the song at radio or TV or print or online, wherever they, you know, whichever platforms they play in, and throw it at the wall and just see if it sticks. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, bad luck. And it's not how we operate in particular. You know, we have to listen to the song. If we think we can add value, then we'll take it on. And then on top of that, you know, comes the issue of managing people's expectations as well, because there are some artists out there that think that they know where the song lies in that media sphere and really don't have a clue because, you know, there's no book out there that you can pick up and read and go, okay, so this is how you release a song and this is how you take it to radio. It's just, there's nothing out there. So you're relying on our experience and our expertise to, you know, navigate you through those waters. So it's a very complex thing that we do, and it's also, you know, high risk and high reward as well. You know, there are not every song is going to be a hit, and not every song is going to fail miserably. It just depends on, you know, what the song has to offer at that time in that place, what else comes out, what other releases are in market at that time. And, you know, sometimes we have, you know, some great success, and other times, you know, for a lot of unforeseen circumstances, we don't have that much luck. So it's really tough, and, you know, the radio landscape in particular is a very tight format where, you know, radio stations these days take very few risks because, you know, competition and ratings are so tight. So it's tough. You know, you're, you know, in this day and age, you're not as an Australian artist, for example, you're not just competing against other Australian acts. You're competing globally.
Yeah.
With every other release that comes out. So it's a very tough landscape, and it's extremely competitive.
When you're fighting for those little pieces of time that we all have limited amounts of, I can imagine it's very competitive and challenging to know the right direction to step into. How do you, or what advice do you give to people around that side of things? Like, if they came to you, I know that you have a particular type of music that you prefer to take on. What advice would you give to someone as to when they're talking to a PR agent, what should they be looking for?
I think they should be looking for genuine interest in the release, because, you know, I think if the PR person is not fully engaged and immersed into the music you're releasing, then that could be trouble. The other thing is, you know, you need to look at their experience and their knowledge. You should be asking them a million questions about, you know, how well they're doing in the marketplace, what genre of music they're focusing on, and what success rates they've had in the past. You should also be asking, you know, what they think of the release and what value they can add to that particular release. So, you know, a good PR person should be able to give you a rough indication as to where that song is going to land across, you know, country radio, pop radio, commercial radio, community radio, ABC radio, you know. Yeah. Because, you know, if you're engaging someone, you need to make sure that they're very knowledgeable and very well connected in whatever genre of music you're releasing. And you know, I'd also ask them, you know, their prices, obviously. Some PR agents will take a commission. Some PR agents will take a flat rate. Some PR agents will take a flat fee with, you know, the ability to extend a PR campaign. It all depends, you know.
Yeah.
I know at Verasso PR we're very fluid. We have, you know, we don't have a set rate for every client. It all depends on the song. Every song is different, so every rate is different. And that way we can be really flexible and allow independent artists in particular to have more control over their finances.
I respect that. And everyone does come from a different situation. And I like to think that, you know, in the industry, we want to find people that we can work with, but that we can also grow with. And if you find people like that, your success should be their success. And, you know, rising tide lifts all boats, that sort of story. And I've seen that work really well in the industry, not just in Australia, but, you know, the more and more people I talk to, that's what happens. One person's success, you know, lifts up other people, and it's just this thing where we can either build each other up or we can pull each other down. And I definitely want to be on the side of let's lift each other up. Mm. I want to find out a little bit more about your story, if you don't mind. Let's get personal.
Yeah.
But how did you even end up in the music industry? Are you a musician? Like, what was the drive for you?
No, I'm a wannabe musician. I know that in my youth, I dreamt many times of being a rock star.
Didn't we all?
I don't have a musical bone in my body, unfortunately.
Well, you clearly do in some way.
Oh yeah, I think as a young child, I know I listened to music a lot, and I loved it, and I bought records all the time, and that was my, I guess my escape from reality. Not that I had a bad childhood or anything like that, but I just loved music. And I didn't play an instrument, much to my misfortune, but I think I fell into music. I did a university degree, which I ended up sort of moving away from.
What did you study? Did you finish it?
I did a BA. Yeah, I finished it. I did a BA in leisure studies, and I was working at an OT setting, occupational therapist at a nursing home, which I enjoyed, but it was quite an emotional experience working with people with dementia. So
yeah,
I was putting together rec programs and things like that, and I, you know, I was in my early to mid-20s, and, you know, life was pretty morose at that point. Mm. You know, it was just dealing with Alzheimer's, which is just a horrible disease. And anyway, I decided to move away from that, and there was a job going as a booker at a venue in Melbourne, at the Evelyn Hotel, and that was a venue that was very much, I guess, entrenched in the Melbourne independent music scene back in the day. Mm. And I was sort of booking bands there, but it really wasn't my forte. I ended up dealing with a magazine called Impress Magazine, which is now, I believe, called The Music.
Okay. .com.
And Impress was a street paper back in the day, and I was selling advertising there as well as doing a lot of interviews with, you know, some pretty big artists at the time that were, you know, touring The Big Day Out and things like that. So I had a great time there. But my main role was to sell advertising. So I had a very, very good black book. I was dealing with all the record labels. I was also dealing with, you know, promoters, you know, bands, venues, the whole thing. So my contacts in Melbourne at the time, you know, were really, really good. And they were all, you know, very key people within the music scene. So I was quite fortunate to you know, have that role. And I recall Warner Music were after someone at the time in Melbourne, and I was told to apply for the PR position there, and I did, and I got the job, which was great. And so the rest is history. So I kind of fell in it, Ray Lee. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't, you know, I didn't have this vision to join a label. I know when I was at Impress, I wanted to work for a label.
Yeah.
But it all came about very quickly. And, you know, I was well connected. So, you know, clubs,
you
bars,
restaurants,
the whole thing. Yeah, I did. I did manifest it. And so, I haven't looked back since. And I've loved working with the labels over the years. And, you know, I managed to get a really good overall picture of the industry, which was really valuable.
I love that. And for someone who used to work in marketing and advertising for 8 years as well in sales, it's such a tough gig. And to say that you've done that and the relationships you were able to build and grow to where you are now speaks volumes as to the integrity of the person that you are as a salesperson, because it's really about relationship building, isn't it? And, you know, that industry of advertising and sales churns so many people, because it's so tempting, I think, for a lot of people to white lie or set wrong expectations and, you know, really annoy a lot of people. And that's the last thing you want to do. You want to low expectations and then overachieve, and then, you know, like, that was always my goal anyway, and have good communication skills.
And mine, Rayleigh. I mean, they're essential things when you're in that sort of sales marketing role, where, you know, any relationship really has to be reciprocal, otherwise it's just not going to work. So you know, I've always been a straight shooter and call a spade, and, you know, I'll always go above and beyond. Like you were saying, you won't try and overachieve, and if you can keep people happy and content, then, you know, that's goal accomplished.
Yeah, and I definitely learned that in that role of, you want to at least communicate what you believe you can achieve, but you're always going to want, you want to be able to go back and go, oh, actually, we've done more. That's awesome. But the last thing you want to have to do is say, oh, we've missed the mark. And that's, you know, and so, and how to be able to do that in this industry, like we talked about before with the wins and losses, setting expectations isn't easy. So it's beautiful to see how you've actually come in and you've actually managed to maintain those relationships and be in the industry for that long. And I do feel like a lot of people burn out. How do you think you've managed to stay in the industry for this long?
I think,
and still be so passionate about it.
Well, I think that's the core. I think it's the passion. I think I just love, you know, I love music, but I love nothing more than being able to take an artist to another level. You know, it's really refreshing, and it's so invigorating when I hear an artist on, you know, that I'm working on radio, or see them doing a TV interview, or watching them play to an audience that's just losing their mind, you know. there's nothing like that. You can't buy that experience. And I think that's what's kept me going all this time, is that music moves all of us emotionally, and I'm probably the most emotional person out there. I still cry when I watch certain video clips,
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I had a a video come through, excuse me.
That's right.
Not that long ago from Hardy, Wait in the Truck with Lainey Wilson. And I watched that video and I was brought to tears. And and I love the fact that I can do that still. And I think that's why I love this industry so much, is that it can move you emotionally, but it can also, inspire you, not just from a musical perspective, but from life in general. Really, I think music can be uplifting. It can be tragic at times, but it can also be invigorating and challenging. And I think the longevity for me has been, from a personal level, it's just been that I'm really passionate about what I do, and I love, giving artists the opportunity to share their music, globally. That's the thing I love the most.
I love that. And globally is important in the music industry because it's got to that sort of a size that, if you want to have a job in the industry, you kind of need to be thinking in that terms of how far to go. Anyone who's listened to this podcast has heard me say it a few times. I say there's two types of people: people who like country and people who will one day when they understand what it is.
Well, you're right. I was one of those naysayers, I'll be brutally honest. Having worked at record labels, yes, we released country music and things like that. But I still work very much in that pop, rock, alternative music genres. I mean, we work a number of releases on a regular basis in that genre, but country was something that I got into probably about 5 years ago. And I remember going to a particular concert. I think it was Randy Houser from memory, at the Corner Hotel in Melbourne, which is quite an iconic indie venue. And I remember going to see him, and I was expecting to see, 50-year-olds with 10-gallon hats. And I distinctly remember walking in, Ray Lee. I walked in, I looked around, and I had to look at my watch and make sure that I was there on the right day, because there were nothing but 18 to 25-year-olds crowd surfing, singing every song verbatim.
That's crazy.
And I think that's when the whole country scene dawned on me, and I thought to myself, hang on, how blindsided was I, and how naive was I to think that this, genre really appealed to just an older audience? It opened my mind up incredibly. And that's when I, since then I started working in that country sphere, and I've really enjoyed it. All the reasons you mentioned before, it's quite emotional, and lyrically, it's really potent, and they're real life stories, which is great.
Oh, you saw me in Tamworth. I was an emotional mess at that festival this year, and I couldn't help myself. Such beautiful people, and I think that's the great thing about country music, is anyone can get into it anytime. There's no I know that they're your hardcore. I was raised on country people. It's such a welcoming genre that you can come at any time, and most people are like, sweet, we're just glad to have you here. It's good.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. I mean, and a valid point. That's something that I noticed immediately with particularly the media and country music, dealing with media on a daily basis, when it's pop or rock or mainstream, I guess, music, if you like. Media are really, it's super competitive, and it's dog eat dog. And what I found with country media in particular was that they were so welcoming and willing to help. And it made that transition for me and my PR company over to to take in, you know, country music, a hell of a lot easier. And that's, you know, that's something I'll never forget, because there are a lot of people who were really helpful and able to guide me through some traverse waters there for a while. And it was great. And I'd never forget that, never.
Well done to the Australian country music industry, because I do. I think they're very welcoming and beautiful and supportive. Yeah. And we need to have more of that. You kind of touched on a point that it is very competitive in the mainstream, especially in Australia. I've talked to a few people about tall poppy syndrome that we definitely have here. Do you think that that is an Australian problem, or have you noticed that it's all over the world, it's everywhere, it's not just us?
Oh, I think it's global, Rayleigh. You know, we now have so much more music at our disposal that space on radio is super competitive, because, as I mentioned before, you know, we're not just dealing with Australian artists anymore. We're dealing with, you know, a global platform here where music is coming in from all countries, you know, and a plethora of it is being dropped daily. So it's not just Australia. And look, the country music scene in Australia is competitive. Don't get me wrong. It's just part of the industry. I mean, you know, if no matter what music you're working in, you know, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. And it's really competitive. And I think country music in Australia has come a long way. I just the quality of music is just so strong now, to the point where, you know, my main ambition is to try and cross country music over into the mainstream radio stations. I think that we're getting there, and we're making some really good inroads. And that's what I'd love to see. I'd love to see country music fall into that mainstream radio genre. I mean, you know, mainstream radio these days are playing rock, and they're playing pop, and they're playing hip hop, and all those sorts of things. And I just can't understand why country can't be a part of that. And I'm doing everything I agree wholeheartedly. Absolutely.
More and more people I talk to, they're getting into it. People love country. Young people love country now.
Well, it's, you know, when you talk to, you know, Apple and Spotify, you know, the first thing they tell me is that, you know, country is the fastest growing genre, has been for the last 4 years. People are not, you know, not backward like I was back in the 5 years ago. And
I was there with you.
It was just, you know, an older audience. When, you know, you look at, you know, CMC, you go to CMC Festival, for example, and it's just full of young people, you know, having an absolute blast, loving their music. And it's all country. It's fantastic.
It is fun. What sort of advice would you give to someone who is just starting out? Maybe, you know, they've got their first sort of release coming up, and this is a big thing for first release people going to a PR agent. What's your advice, whether they come to you or they're going to someone else, what's your advice how to set expectations or what to expect from releasing their music?
I think the key thing is for anyone that's releasing music is to have a plan. We do talk to a lot of young artists who will send us music, and whether it's good, bad or indifferent, you know, the key element is that they need to have a strategy and a plan behind it. It's easy to put out a song and release it, you know, into the world, but, you know, if you don't have a strategy behind what you're doing, it becomes completely futile. Unless you've got an absolute lay down mazair song that is a massive hit and you flip it. But, you know, that very, very rarely happens. I think there's a lot of planning involved. I think, you know, my advice to a lot of those artists is to try and ensure that they have all the tools at their disposal, that they've got, you know, label copy, that their song is, you know, signed up to APRA so that they can receive royalties, so that they have artwork well in hand. They've got WAV files and MP3 files. They've got a press release. They've got a biography. They've got artwork. They've got a video. They've got all those tools that are necessary to try and, you know, break into this industry. Whereas, you know, quite a few artists just, you know, have a song and some artwork and go, right, that's it. I'm just going to put it out.
Mm-hmm.
They also need other songs to back it up. Mm-hmm. You know, they need, you know, radio will only play songs that sound really well produced. You can't play a Miley Cyrus track on radio, followed up by a Taylor Swift track, followed by a, you know, a Jimmy Allen track, and then expect radio to play your song. If it doesn't sound, if it's not produced and sound amazing, it won't get played. And so it's a really expensive business, because when you think about, you know, video clips and recording mm-hmm. budgets and all those sort of things, it adds up, you know, mm-hmm. and it's really important. I know a lot of artists tend to produce things themselves sometimes, but, you know, I think these days artists need to surround themselves with the right professionals that are really good at what they do, you know. So
yeah,
my advice to a lot of artists is to, you know, hook up with a really good producer that knows how to record, you know.
Yeah.
Make sure that they've got a really good photographer that can take some, you know, some photographs for print and online use mm-hmm. and social media use. A videographer who can shoot a great video but can also create a great deal of content for you to use on social media.
Yeah.
Or radio, social media for that fact. You know, so there's a lot more involved, and I know I've forgotten a lot of things or omitted a lot of things, but content is king these days. So anything that you can get on film whilst you're recording your video, there's no reason why an artist couldn't do, you know, a track by track or a piece of camera when, you know, you're having makeup done or you know, they're fixing the set where you can't talk about the making of the song and things like that. There are so many little details that are often overlooked.
It invites the audience to come on the journey with you.
Absolutely.
And be a part of the process, and they want to. Yeah, engagement.
Exactly, Rayleigh. It's key, you know. If you can't connect to a song lyrically or visually or with an artist emotionally, then you're in trouble, you know. I think that's where – that's the gold, I think, you know, and that's very hard to achieve, but, you know.
It requires vulnerability. It really does. It requires vulnerability to reach out into the unknown and go, here's my heart, judge it, punch it, do whatever you want with it, but those of you that need it, you can hold it. And that's why we do it, I think, as artists. Like, that's my kind of goal, because some people need your heart to survive or hold on to, and your story or whatever it is. And that's a beautiful thing to do, but it does come with a few scars that you've got to be ready to take.
And that's why, Rayleigh, you know, I think you need to, you know, surround yourself with the right people that believe. You know, because, you know, more often than not, you know, we've had to, you know, talk to our artists and persuade them to take those risks and commit to putting themselves out there, which is really hard to do. But, you know, sometimes they need encouragement, sometimes they need some guidance, and sometimes they need to be told, no, don't do that. You know,
finding someone to be honest with you is the hardest thing to do in this industry. But if you can find those people, it's worth it. I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned, and we've talked about mainstream. It's very competitive. Something that I have noticed that I feel like you're going to know about in the media at the moment is that I feel like radio is mainly playing whatever is on TikTok. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, radio is a business. And so sometimes, you know, music is the BS behind the advertising. Mm-hmm. So, you know, radio needs to survive as a business, and to do that they need advertising dollars. And the best way for radio to maintain listeners and maintain high ratings so they can charge higher advertising rates is to make sure that people are listening in. And the only way to do that is to ensure that the time spent listening on a particular radio station is as high as it can be. You know, radio these days has to play what people want to hear. And I think when you look at social media, whether it be TikTok, Instagram, or Facebook, or even Shazam, you know, you're in a situation where they're really good barometers of what people want to listen to.
Yep.
So it's very easy for, or easier these days, for radio stations to decide what they will play. So theoretically, if Frank FM, for argument's sake, you know, if I had a particular demographic that I was targeting, whether that be, you know, 25 to 39 females and males, then social media would be right up my alley. And a lot of radio stations spend an obscene amount of money researching songs that are on their playlists. So a lot of them will look for, you know, faves, they'll look for potential, they'll also look for burn on songs. And that helps them decide what songs they'll keep playing, how often they'll keep them playing, or whether they will just move them into a recurrent category where they get played once every couple of months. That costs a lot of money, and they're often, you know, farmed out to third parties, or they're done in-house, but they're expensive processes. But when you've got something like, say, Shazam or TikTok, I mean, TikTok can certainly generate a lot of heat for an artist. It's not the be-all and end-all, but it helps. But when you look at something like Shazam, for argument's sake, that is free research. You and I and any artist could jump on Shazam, look at the most Shazam songs, and that will tell you what people want to hear. I mean, 99.9% of the time, the only time you'll Shazam a song is if you want to hear it, if you like it. So
I use Shazam all the time. I love it.
And so that's, you know, that's how you can research what's hot and what's not. So, you know, radio, I'm not being flippant when I say this. I know that radio music directors work really hard at deciding what they will and won't play, because the thing is that there is only 24 hours in a day, and there is only so much music you can schedule in a day on a radio station. So it's a tough gig. You know, if there were 32 hours in a day, I'm sure we would hear more Australian music on radio. But that's another story.
Yeah, but we're being flooded with, like, it's not just TikTok. There's also, you know, Netflix, TV series, songs that people are hearing and then Shazamming from everywhere. And film is international as well. It, you know, Netflix, I know that they have their own scheduling of Australian series and things like that, and then there's live-to-air TV. But then there's, you know, there's production all over the world, and that is another area that I'm very passionate about. But I don't feel like – I feel like you've kind of covered everything there. It's just like – it's selective. It is a gamble. We've already talked about that. it shouldn't be the reason you're doing it. Like, if you're trying to please everyone by doing what music, I don't know about you, but my advice would be try something else.
No, look, my advice is be you. You know, your music, you know, as an artist, you know, that it's your name on that release, not mine, not anyone else's. It's yours. So, you know, I do have a lot of artists often ask me, you know, like, should I make music for Triple J, or should I make music for Nova, or Hit or Kiss? And it's kind of like, no, just make what makes you happy and is a good representation. The moment you start trying to make songs for radio is the moment you lose the plot.
Future goals for you. Where do you see yourself going, your artists? What do you want to see happen? Where are you going? Is it global? South by Southwest? You're going to head there sometime?
Yeah, sometime soon, I hope.
You should come with me next month.
Yeah, I wish.
Just do it.
We've got too many festivals on between now and the end of April. It's ridiculous. I'm going to be on the road. Oh, look, ideally for me, where to next? It's a really good question. I think about this all the time. And I'd love to set up offices globally. I'd like to set up in Nashville if I can. I think that's where the heat is at the moment. I don't think anyone's in LA anymore. I think all those musos and songwriters that were once in LA are now in Nashville, and Nashville seems to be the hotspot. So
Music City.
Yeah, And I'd like
to say, music capital of the world.
It is. It is. For, yeah. And it's not just for country. It's for pop and rock as well. So yeah. I'd love to set up internationally. I often get asked, you know, why don't you set up in New Zealand? I love New Zealand as a country. I think it's great. But I think, you know, they're very parochial over there. If you're not a Kiwi, you're not that welcome, I don't think.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's a generalisation. I do a lot of work for Kiwi artists, don't get me wrong, over here. But I think,
yeah,
you know, for me, I think I need to look, you know, the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
And look at setting up shop there. I'm always looking for partners in the US and Canada that I can mm-hmm. work with, because if I can extend, you know, my reach outside of Australia, I think it makes it a bit more viable for artists. But, you know, it's
teamwork really, makes the dream work.
It's really difficult. It's not hard to do. It's not hard for me to set up internationally. The problem that I have is that it costs an obscene amount of money to compete in the US. And Canada, because they're very different radio markets. You know, we have very few stations here in Australia as opposed to the US, where there are thousands upon thousands in each state. So to break an artist in the US costs at least $1 million minimum.
Yeah.
And none of my artists have that money to burn. So.
Well, I bought a lottery ticket last night. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, let me know how you go.
It's a bit like that, isn't it?
But it's interesting. Look, that's what I'd like to do too. But you know, I'd really like Australian music to be, you know, really regulated over here in terms of radio airplay. I'd love to see Australian radio have a much higher ratio played on air here. I mean, at the moment, a lot of Australian music is played very late at night, in mid-dawns, and I would love to see the quota, that was the word I was looking for, the Australian music quota to be lifted significantly here in Australia. That's something I've been harping on for a long time, and I just wish Commercial Radio Australia and, you know, a number of other organisations that deal with radio could push that quota up. You know, when you look at countries like France that have around 75%, New Zealand is quite high too. You know, like to be a musician in this country is really tough work, and, you know, most musicians have to have a second job. So if our radio quotas were much higher, I think we'd have a much healthier industry overall, and that would be music to my ears.
And it's a bit chicken and the egg as well with that sort of stuff. And I've had this conversation around female and males in the industry.
Yeah.
But just in general, if the quota was higher, then maybe there would be more budget and higher ticket sales and things like that, and support for the artists, that then the quality would increase. Whereas I know some people will say, well, give us better quality and we'll give you, you know, more play. It's like, but if you give us more play, we'll have more budget to create better quality. And that's the same thing with, you know, women and men for festivals. It's like, well, women don't get the ticket sales because, you know, they're not releasing the quality. It's like, well, but they're not getting the money. And it's like, it is this kind of like cycle of how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
Culture needs to change. Someone needs to lead the way.
I mean, I still don't get why, you know, females don't sell tickets. I find that mind-boggling. But anyway, yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a bit chicken of the egg, but I think regulations here need to change for the industry to grow. And I think a higher quota on Australian radio would make such a significant contribution to the industry. It would boost sales. It would boost touring dollars. It would boost recording dollars. Funding, everything. It would just make the scene a hell of a lot more robust in terms of, you know, sustaining a lifestyle as a musician, or as a producer, or as a roadie, or as a venue,
yeah.
It just has such a massive flow-on effect that it would make our industry, you know, really, really strong. And that's,
and I think we are very patriotic as a country. I know that there's obviously internal conflicts, but when we see an Australian have success, we find, you know, we jump on board, yeah, and we want to be there. We want to say we're Australian, they're Australian, their success is our success. And I think we do that well when we get past the, if it's just internally. Do you think the government, or like, is it APRA or PPCA or one of those agencies that are going to be the leaders in trying to get regulations changed?
Well, look, I think, you know, I know there have been talks of late to get the quotas increased. But, you know, this has been going on for decades now, and quite frankly, I'm still baffled as to why nothing has happened. And, you know, it's been something I've been advocating and trying to get people to embrace now for well over 20 years. You know, it's been an issue for 30 years, to be honest, and even longer. But since I've been in the industry, it's been an ongoing issue and nothing has happened. So, you know,
what do you think the issue is, awareness or?
I just think just it's just action. Care? It's just action. People just making those decisions. I think the government just needs to step in and go, make it happen, people, make it happen. It's for our own economy, for our own people, our own artists, our own venues, our own recorders, you know, recording studios. You know, it's as an industry, you know, the thing that frustrates me most, Ray Lee, is that whenever we have a crisis in this country, musicians are the first ones, always, the first ones to put up their hand and put on a benefit concert. They offer their services for free. They raise millions of dollars. And then when our industry needs a hand, nothing happens. And that's disgraceful, personally, absolutely disgraceful. And I think a lot of people realised that during COVID, when our industry was in a very dire space, and there was no one was offering a hand, no one, and that's pitiful. So, yeah, look, I don't want to bring the conversation down, but it's something I'm really passionate about. I think
that wasn't bringing it down; that was bringing it up.
You know, I really good. Think that people, the government in this time just needs to step up. I know Albanese's creating some really good forums to try and raise awareness and hopefully the quotas, because until that's done, I don't think our industry will ever reach its potential, because I think there are so many talented people in Australia that write, record and perform, and you know what most people don't realize, I think as a PR firm we get a lot of music. And the most tragic thing is that some of the best songs ever written aren't even heard, and that's criminal.
Criminal. I love it. I mean, I'm a preacher's daughter, and I just want to scream out, preach it and amen to all of that. So that's how I was taught to agree with people. But no, absolutely, I love everything you just said, and I love you so much for being vocal about it. And I agree that the more vocal we can be about it, unfortunately, that's how the things go, is that and this happens with kids in schools as well. It's the loudest get the most attention.
Yep.
But that is how we see change, and we just have to get louder about it and not go away. Even if it has been years and years and years, we just got to get louder and louder and louder until someone pays attention. And you got to fight for what you want. So I love it that you're doing that. Thank you on behalf of the music industry in Australia. tell me about your inspirations. So people that inspire you, dead or alive, anyone in the world, you had your choice of who you got to work with. Who would be a dream to work with?
I can't really single one person out. I think the people that I've worked with, you know, and over the last 30 years that I've met that I never thought I would meet,
like who?
Inspire. Oh, look, you know, like Tom Jones was incredible. Madonna was amazing as well. But, you know, rather than name drop, I think the thing that inspires me the most really is some of the, you know, seeing the pros out there that know the business and know how to behave and know how to conduct themselves and know what's required. Mm. It's really interesting, Ray, because, you know, I've met a lot of one-hit wonders in my time, and they are the artists that least inspire me because they have fame so quickly and are completely clueless on how this industry works, whereas those that have longevity, you know, whether it be the Foo Fighters or you know, Madonna or Red Hot Chili Peppers or Tom Jones or Simply Red, whoever, they're working with them is such an inspiration for me because it's such a demanding role. Everyone thinks that, you know, being a superstar is all glitz and glamour and it's, you know, you're rolling in the money and you know, life's grand and, you know, it's a cruisy lifestyle. It is so, so different to what our perceptions are that it's quite demanding. It's, you're on 24/7, you know, people think that it's, you know, it's sailing in, you know, the Caribbean and, you know, taking it easy and smoking big fat cigars and counting wads of cash and buying and spending. And, but the lifestyle.
You're saying that's not what it is.
It's not what it is. I'm telling you, it's not, you know.
That's what the music videos look like. That's
oh yeah, absolutely. Sometimes. That's sometimes. You know, I honestly think that that's, you know, it's every musician's dream is to live that lifestyle. But there's a lot of work involved. And what inspires me is the work ethic that those that have longevity. I love that. I just love that 24/7 work mentality. Nothing's too hard. You know,
yes.
Like I remember, you know, celebrating platinum records with Tom Jones for argument's sake. And, you know, we went out the night before and we were drinking champagne and going, you know, club hopping and having a great time and just celebrating the fact that we had a double or triple platinum record. But the next morning at 7:30 a.m., he had to sing, you know, on live breakfast TV. We didn't get home till 5. Ray Lee, I was shattered. I literally went home, had a shave, a shower, and then went back to the hotel and I was a wreck, you know. Got the cab back in and Tom was ready in reception, looking ready a million bucks, let's go, you know, ready, you know. And that's the thing, you know, through to I remember Madonna when, you know, she came out and toured Australia, you know. I recall watching her at Gudinski's place, watching the playback video of her entire concert the night before. And she wasn't, you know, just looking at it for fun. She was looking at it to critique her own performance. And that's what, you know, that's what it takes. It takes a lot of commitment. So, you know, that's what inspires me, Ray. It's not... What inspires me is the creativity that other people have that I don't, you know. It's their commitment to the cause. It's wonderful, you know. Like I look and I could quote millions of other artists, but it's just their professionalism, their ability to work within the guidelines that they need to work within, because it's a demanding role. Being a successful musician is hard work. You're not just, you know, buying lovely dresses or, you know, expensive jewelry. You're planning your next release. You're doing video clips. You're selecting clothes. You're, you know, coming up with the creatives. You're writing songs. You're recording. There's so much more that goes on behind the scenes that people don't realize, and it's exhausting. It's hard. Oh, yeah, yeah, and more time, I think, because there's a lot of issues that, you know, we've touched on that I could talk forever on, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm right. I've got an opinion on everything like everyone else has, but I think it's good that we had this conversation because it will certainly, hopefully a lot of people will see it, a lot of young artists will see it and realise that, you know, that there's a lot more to it than just releasing a record. You mean the amount
Absolutely.
Of times I have artists ringing me up going, hey, I've got this great song, and they do, they'll have a great song, but they want to release it in 2 weeks, and I'm like, yeah. Can't do it. Yeah. You know, signing a record deal isn't the be-all and end-all, because essentially, you know, a lot of the record deals now are 360-degree deals where labels will take a percentage of your publishing, your recording, your streaming, your touring, your merchandise, mm-hmm. the whole thing. And it's funny how artists sort of go, oh, I've just signed to a record label and I'm getting a $100,000 advance or a $500,000 advance. And the problem is what they don't realise is that's all recoupable. That is essentially a bank loan. So you don't see a cent until you recoup that. And so this is why, you know, the new model these days is to do it all yourself and surround yourself with the right publishing company.
Build your team. And takes away from the fun of what this industry should be.
Correct.
But I think my favourite thing that you said out of everything, I mean, you said really cool stuff, but I loved have a plan. I get fed up with people not having a plan and be like, I'm just going to release it to Spotify and let the universe do its thing. And it's like, why even fucking bother? Like, why bother?
But that's what I mean. It's kind of
they
like.
They do it.
People need to think about, you know, all those aspects. It's such a convoluted thing, as you know. You know, you've got so much paperwork to fill out. You've got to make sure the song's registered so that you are receiving royalties. If there's so much that happens beside, you know, outside of just writing, recording and releasing that, you know, and you can't, like I said, there's no book out there that you can put out that every artist can read and go, okay, I need to do this and that and this and that. Yeah. And it's,
every genre is different. Every country is different. It's different. And we've all just got to learn so that we can work out what's best for ourselves as independents, I guess. Yeah, but you've answered a lot of really good questions, so I think it should be fun.
Okay, cool beans. All right, have a good one.
Thanks for joining our songwriter Tris today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com. Stuck, lost in the crowd, no one can hear me. Wish I could.